three quarter win.
And let's see, Monday. Hey, everybody. Wait a second. I'm going to start our recorder. Hang on. Hang on. Hang on.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is being recorded.
Hey, everybody. It's Monday night. My name is Winfrey. Monday, June 11th, 2012. And this is our Monday night BBS call. And I announced it as a wild card. And I said, let's see what comes up and what we're going to do. This is one of those things that, are, if you're new to the calls, they're always different, but they always have a theme. And it's an unusual theme. And the theme is that there are intelligences in other dimensions that are making themselves known to this realm through the work we're doing. And I'm sure through other people's work. But we're doing it in an unusual way because it's rather public. It's rather seat of your pants. And although there's an element of it which is sacred, you could call it sacred, it's special. It's also human. And it's one of the things I've learned is the more human you can be, the better a repeater station you can be. So, although it's exalted on one hand, and those people that are attending our calls regularly kind of understand what I mean, it's also ordinary, but not ordinary in the sense that it happens all the time in this realm. And you know, to give you an example, I just came from the local coffee shop in Sedona, where I live, and I was busy on my computer, and there was this young fellow and a lady, and I don't think they knew each other. I think they started talking, and they were talking about Tesla. And they were talking about all of this kind of far-out stuff. And I wasn't going to say anything. I said, I have work to do. But then I couldn't resist it. I knew they would be really interested. And so I started talking, and I said a little bit. And the woman was saying, oh, my God, I'm getting goosebumps. And you know, I could look and see as soon as I start talking about this, I start connecting and they start coming in. Now, I know that happens for me, and I become very, very familiar with the feeling, and I become even to the point where I'm confident in it. And believe it or not, it can happen for you as well. But you have to become really familiar with it. And you have to learn how to introduce it. Because the problem is, if you introduce it in the wrong way, it doesn't sound ordinary. And if it sounds too far out, people go unconscious. And now I heard Terry. Terry, are you there? Why don't you call the conference line and just come in that way, because you missed the call from BBS, okay? So, in my case, I think one of the most powerful ways, because I didn't know how to introduce this, okay? You know, for a few years, I sat there and I said, okay, this is really important. I think it's important. I think they are who they say they are. But where do you start? Where do you start talking about it and getting people interested without sounding exalted, without sounding holier than thou, without having to be something. I think the idea is that you have to be more than you were to be worthy of doing it. You have to be very, how would you say it? I don't even know the words. And
entry and exit chimes are off.
And what was the second?
Entry chimes are off. Exit chimes are on.
Just
entry chimes are on. Exit chimes are off.
Hang on. Wait a second.
Entry and exit chimes are on.
Okay.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
Now, when you hear those chimes, that means somebody's coming into the conference call. And, you know, we do these calls 3 times a week. And the thing about it is that this is a co-creation. These calls are a co-creation between us and them. And that the idea is that there are other dimensions. And, of course, we can't see them. So for many of us, the first idea of other dimensions sounds like a science fiction story. And how do you know there's other dimensions? How do you know? How do you prove it? Well, I don't know if you can prove it scientifically. Although Einstein did make the point that as you increased your speed of travel, that time moved at a different speed. So in other words, if there were a bunch of people getting in a spaceship, traveling really fast, close to the speed of light, if that was possible, and they came back to Earth, maybe they only aged 5 years or 1 year or a half a year or whatever, and yet the people on the planet would have been a lot older. Could have been 50 or 100 years that went by. It depends how fast they were traveling. Well, one of the things that I have come to understand is that different dimensions could be looked at as different timelines. There are places where time moves at different speeds, and there are beings in those other speeds, and it goes up because there's time is moving at this speed, and then there's another place where time is moving faster, another place where time is moving faster yet. And in many cases, the beings and the intelligence on a given timeline are not aware of the beings in another timeline. Although sometimes we become aware of that. People that can see ghosts, people that are psychic, people that can do healing, usually can do those things because they're starting to access other timelines. Well, at the beginning of all the timelines, there is an intelligence. And it's kind of a mystery down here. Who is that intelligence? What are they? Are they real? And then people down here can decide to call that intelligence God. They can decide to call it the one infinite creator. They could call it love or spirit, you know, whatever name we have. But it's like far, far away. It's like talking about another country across the other side of the world. And yet, when you're talking about timelines, it's different than space lines, the different spaces. Because if there's another country across the planet, 10,000 miles away, that country is there, and we are here, and there is most definitely space that separates us, and never the two will meet. But when you're talking about timelines, it is possible for a human to move into different timelines. And it's also possible for certain intelligences in other timelines to move into this timeline. And there are certain people that have special abilities to be able to let those intelligence in other timelines speak through them. And we are lucky enough to have two of the most extraordinary people on the planet who have gifted us with their presence and the communications from these higher timelines. And of course, that's Daphne and Terry. Are you on the line, Terry? And so on many of these calls, we have communications from those other timelines. Now, here is the challenge for a human who is listening and is getting exposed to this. Are they really who they say they are? Are they really where they say they are? What's the advantage of hearing these communications to me? There has to be some advantage. I mean, it could be a novelty, but that wears out pretty quickly. And yet, there's all these people that keep coming and listening to our calls and listening to our replays, and I assume they're getting some kind of benefit from it. And I know from the emails I get, some of them believe they're feeling the energies, making the connections, and occasionally sometimes somebody gets a message. So we're setting a reference point here on these calls and the other work we do, and in the books that I write, and the emailings we do, and in Message a Day, to make a bridge from other timelines to here. And so, what's the advantage? Well, I think there's probably two main advantages for a human to get this. One of them, maybe there's more than two, I don't want to limit myself, but I'll start out with two and see if another one pops in. One of them is, we are humans, and we are in this life, and we're trying to figure it out. What's it all about, Alfie? Why are we here? What's the meaning of it? Where do we go when we die? Where did we come from before we were born? We are blinded to all those things. Our human senses perceive the physical world, and we perceive and smell and see and taste things that are physical. And yet, there is this idea that we are more than physical, and we are exist in other realms, but we don't know it. How do we know that? Well, we have this guidance from these sources, and they're in other realms, and they are constantly explaining how it works and how we look to them. Now, that doesn't mean you should believe them, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't believe them. You should take it in and consider it, and not only look at the wisdom of it, but look at the energies that you feel as part of the connections. You know, recently we did a couple readings for a couple people, and I would keep them anonymous, and I'll even keep the details of the readings anonymous. And I don't usually put out and talk too much about readings, but on the other hand, I have watched people discover patterns that they never have discovered if they didn't get a reading. What do I mean by patterns? Well, the idea is that we all have many lifetimes, and we keep coming back. And every time we come back, it's a blank slate on one hand. It's a blank slate because we don't remember anything. We're fresh in the world, and we're saying, what am I doing here? On the other hand, there's an aspect to it which is not a blank slate, and that is that we carry patterns that we've established in other lifetimes. And everybody has those patterns, and they don't know where they come from. And mostly we assume that's who we are. When I was younger, that's how I was. I said, this is who I am. I have these hang-ups. I have these talents. And I didn't know they were related to past lifetimes. How do you know that? You need a little more evidence than just somebody saying it. Well, then we discovered that people tend to look like their past lifetimes. So occasionally we have asked our sources. So the one that I put out to the public, but there's quite a few more. We asked, I asked Daphne, who's on the line, was Terry ever anybody there?
Terry's on the line too.
Terry's on the line too? Okay. Was Terry ever anybody famous? And they said, look up St. Catherine of Siena, who was this woman who would go into the local church in Siena, Italy, and she would channel. And they would write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking to them through her. And St. Catherine's dialogues with God are part of Catholic history, recognized by the central body of the church, and are still being sold on Amazon. And when Terry looks at them, she says, oh my God, I need to do a little more editing. You know, hey. Last night, Terry was up all night, or up this morning, working, editing the stuff that comes through here. Because when we go and look at it, we say, my God, where does that came from? Well, what are the chances that that is just random? I don't think much chance. And that a voice that says they can see these things says, look up this person, and Terry happens to be the spitting image of that person. If you've never looked at that, I have a page up on it, catherine.messageaday.net. Go take a look at the pictures. So it's pretty compelling. It's pretty convincing. And who was I talking to earlier? I was talking, the fellow in Starbucks. We're talking about that. And he says, oh, the Dalai Lama looks like all the other Dalai Lamas. Well, you know, in some circumstances, like with the Dalai Lama, and within families even, people keep coming back, and they come back to their sect, to their organization, or to their family. One of the reasons I think there's such a drive for people to have children, you know, it's an innate drive, is because when you have a child and you bring them up well, and if you become wealthy and you put a lot of wealth into that family and leave a legacy, there's a good chance some point in the future you're going to end up back in that family as a grandson or a great-grandson, whatever. And so there's a compelling subconscious desire to create a family for many people. I won't say for everybody. It wasn't for me this lifetime, but for many people, there's the compelling desire to create a family unit because it creates a place for you to come back to. And if you make it really comfortable, and if you make it abundant and wealthy, then you come back into a wealthy environment. And of course, life is easier in this realm when there's money. But on the other hand, life may be easier in this realm because there's money, but you may be not having all the growth you can have if you're brought up in a wealthy environment. And because you don't have the challenges that force you to surface other elements of your being that were, you can just slide through life. You can glide coast. You can coast. And that doesn't necessarily, ultimately, it doesn't necessarily make you happier. Can, depends on you. Everyone's different. But it doesn't make you closer to God necessarily, unless you have a family that's close to God, because then you'll pick it up from your family. But if you don't, then you'll still feel like a human, you won't connect to higher realms, and you'll have a comfortable life. And you come back and you'll have another comfortable life. And, you know, I'm sure there's every chance of randomness and improbability that could be had as a result of these multiple incarnations. And every time you come back, and you see, in my case, in this lifetime, I incarnated. See, I reverse engineer this. I don't remember this, but I've had so much compelling evidence that I'm sure it's true. And I don't want to tell all the stories to give the evidence, but I'll tell you the end result is that I had a reading from somebody years ago, and they told me about a past life that I lived. And my father in this lifetime was my father in that lifetime. No, he wasn't my father. He was someone that I knew and ran across, a stranger who had an innkeeper, and he poisoned me. He gave me hemlock. And so the way it was told to me was that because he poisoned me, he created an energetic connection so that I had the option. I didn't have to, but I had the option to be born through him in this lifetime. And so I reverse engineered that, and obviously I was born through him. So on some level on the other side, I had to have made the choice to have him as a father, except my childhood was a nightmare because the way the subconscious energy was between him and myself was, here's that guy, from his point of view, it was like, here's that guy I thought I got rid of, and here he is, my son, and I totally reject him. What's he doing here? And so my father rejected me all the time I was growing up. And there were, like, some traumatic episodes. There was one episode where he actually stuffed food in my mouth that I didn't want to eat. And I went into, like, a crying mode, ran upstairs, spit the food out. And it was like, on some level, we were reenacting me being poisoned in that other lifetime. And it was things like this that really made me internalize that this idea of reincarnation is real. And then, of course, Terry's situation with St. Catherine, not only was that an indication that reincarnation was real, because I already had that idea, but that our sources were quite legitimate to be able to pull something that like that out of the air. And they don't do that just to make, how would I say it? They don't do it to aggrandize Terry. I mean, we've all had lifetimes where we might have been famous, and maybe our egos would like to hear that. But that's not the reason they said it. They did it in Terry's case. Now, this is me saying this. I didn't ask them why they said it. I'm fairly have a high sense of conviction that this is true. They did it in Terry's case because Terry is very shy, very reserved, and she was very reluctant to be public and do this publicly. And, you know, the question is, what if you're making a mistake? What if they're not who they say they are? What if there's something negative there, and then you do it publicly, you can't take it back? So most people don't do public channelings like this, at least where anyone can listen in. And but that whole St. Catherine thing, well, why don't you share? Terry's on the line. Terry, why don't you share how that impacted you to look at that? and study it.
Well, I remember a lot of my past lives, and it put a lot of stuff together for me because I remembered some of the incidents from the life of Catherine. And I don't call her St. Catherine because she wasn't a saint during her life. She was made a saint after her life. So it was quite a surprise to me to take a look at that. But some of the incidents that I remember when I was a kid was very much like what St. Catherine went through when she was a kid, and I started teaching Sunday school at 14. And so it just kind of put more pieces of the puzzle together for me.
And did it give you more confidence in the work we were doing?
Yeah, but the confidence in the work has been gradually building since 1995. That there were, I can see ghosts and I can see spirits and I can see angels. And, those things are all a background for putting the pieces together of the work we were doing. That it took me a couple of years of just working with these, with the Elohim, to be able to trust the source and know, that recognize the soul signature of that group. And we used to have some conversations like they would say a word to me that I had no idea what the word meant. And then they would say, go look up the word when this is finished. And they would use the word in a bunch of sentences and spell it for me. And I'd even think, well, I hadn't had something sound like a real word. But then I'd look it up and it was a real word. So it just helped things fit in more with all of the other things that track record that we were putting together with channeling with the sources.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Daphne, are you on? Hello, Daphne. No, you don't have to do Star 6. I didn't mute anybody.
I'm here. Hello.
Oh, you're there. Well,
yes.
You know what? You know, I don't want to talk about anything in your past without your permission, but there was that Egyptian lifetime, I think, that's kind of an interesting thing to talk about. And if you want to, I'll talk about it, if you're open to it.
Well, you can certainly talk about your perceptions, and I can share, what I'm conscious of, sure.
Okay. Because, we don't remember those things. I mean, except for Terry. Terry seems to be able to go back and look at them. But, what happened, the way this all started with this Egyptian thing, and if by the way, I want to tell you, if any of you haven't, I have a 4-hour workshop, Egyptian Connection, where I put together huge amounts of pieces of the puzzles of history and how the Ra group was working with this planet and what happened all through Egypt, starting with David Wilcock or Edgar Cayce in his life as Ra-Ta. And, essentially what had happened in Egypt was that the negative, what I call the negative, lower, a really good definition of the negative is all those beings that have not tapped into the divine part of themselves in this realm and in other realms and are hungrily searching for energy down here. And we all need energy. It's not that you shouldn't need energy. I didn't used to understand that when I was younger. I thought one day when you get enlightened, you just walk around like a glowworm and you're with God and you don't need anything. But it's not true, at least not to my experience. You're in a human body, and your body is an animal, and your body has a nature. And if you don't honor it in some way, it rebels, and it makes you sick. It gives you headaches. So each of us has a nature that we have to learn about. To thine own self be true. And the difference between the positive and the negative, let me just say this one thing, is that the negative wants energy, and they're willing to abrogate the free will of everyone around them to get the energy. The positive will not take anyone's free will away. That's the big distinction, and that probably works through all the dimensions and through many of the negative realms, from people in this realm and beings in other dimensions. So what were you going to say, Terry?
I wasn't seeing anything.
Oh, somebody started to say something.
It almost sounded like a kitty in the background.
Maybe it was. Are you guys on the conference line? I don't think I muted you. Are you there?
I did mute the conference line earlier. There was too much noise coming in.
You muted the conference line?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, I might have a chance to open it up and let people talk. But in any case, there's this history that goes through Egypt where the former life of Edgar Cayce David Wilcock, 10,000 B.C., was an Egyptian high priest, and he was communicating with the Ra group. And the Ra group was decided to make a great intervention at that time. And we've talked about it on these calls, where they actually had projected bodies into this realm. They were not born bodies. They were bodies of light, of I don't know how to even explain it, because I don't understand it. But they were visible. They were visible in this realm. And they were doing a lot of miraculous healing work. And according to both Edgar Cayce and Carla Ruckert, they built the pyramids by levitation. And according to Carla Ruckert, the negative priests, which means, again, those priests that were willing to wield power over people, take free will away, use fear as a way of controlling things, those priests started to connect with negative on the other side. And they connected with the negative because their predisposition was to want power. And the negative will connect with you and use you and give you power if you commit to them, which would be, in the Christian sense, that would be the devil's bargain. The devil is not the devil. It's a bunch of guys in spaceships, highly technological, and they have been influencing this planet. So Egypt became under the auspices of the negative, starting with that intervention by the Ra group. And through Carla Ruckert, the Ra group said, that we made a mistake by doing that, and that we assumed a certain responsibility for bringing the negative into this realm and giving them a portal. And so we've been staying in your realm, working closely with you, trying to rectify that. So all of Egypt for thousands of years was under the negative. All those Egyptian gods that we hear about were of the negative. And young children would get initiated into the negative, you know, when they were... So it was an entire country controlled by the negative. And then there was one attempt to stop that from occurring. And according to Carla Ruckert, again, I use her because she's a, I learned a lot from studying her stuff, and it all dovetailed into everything else I was learning. And Carla is my guest once a month on our Monday night calls. So everybody, if you've been listening regularly, you've gotten to know her. But many of you may not have read her raw material, which is available for free on her website. You can download it, llresearch.org. And, you know, this kind of history that I'm sharing with you, you will never, ever find anywhere. It's a mystery to the public, to the world, to the historians. But in any case, Carla Ruckert said there was an Egyptian pharaoh that Ra was talking to and made an attempt, but it kind of failed. But there was an attempt made. And his name was Akhenaten. And Akhenaten was, he outlawed all the religious practices of the priests. And they were doing sacrifices, they were doing manipulations of the masses, they were creating fear that if people didn't give them money, that they would be cursed. That's historic. Now, that part of it is historic. And Akhenaten outlawed it. And Akhenaten's wife was more famous than he was, and his wife was Nefertiti. And some of you have seen the picture of Nefertiti. And so when I was first with Daphne, and she was channeling, I asked the question, I said, I know I exist in other dimensions. I had all kinds of synchronicities in my life. And synchronicities are one sign that you're moving your energy through this dimension into other dimensions. And I said, how do I connect with my own sources in other dimensions? How do I do that? And they said, write your dreams down. So that night, I put a pad by my bed, and I had studied this whole process because that's what David Wilcox started out as. And when I looked at the pad in the morning, I found messages, verbal messages, like it's the insanity of passion that makes things happen in the real world. Like, through your dedication to love, serve, and care, the negativity goes away. Like, communication from another dimension, just like Casey. He slept to connect with this dimension. So at first, I said, I must be making this up. I mean, my life was pretty crazy. I'm writing the book about Wilcox. I've got Daphne channeling his voice that says they're the Elohim. And now I'm getting these dream messages. And if you haven't read The Creator Gods of the Physical Universe Want to Talk to You, you can download it for free, and it tells that whole story of how that started for me. And it's important to read the story because it grounds the energy. It grounds the energy in a real way. So every night I would get more of these sentences, and it sounded like the Ra group. It sounded, I was getting all this wisdom, these wise looks at in my life, okay? You finally found the job you won't get tired of, was one of them. And what else? I can't remember, but they're in that book. Well, finally, I went back to Daphne, and we did a channeling, and I said, could you explain those dream messages? Where are they coming from? And they answered, and they said, Akhenaten. And I said, I knew who Akhenaten was. And I said, in Ra? And then they said, under the auspices of Ra. And then I said, did I know Akhenaten? And they said, you were his right-hand man. And I said, what was my name? And they're very specific. They said, Amenhotep. Now, I never heard the name Amenhotep in my life, but I started studying Googling the word Amenhotep, and I found that that was the name that Akhenaten had, and he changed his name. Why did he change his name? The lower god was called Amun, Amun-Ra, and the higher god was Aten-Ra. It was the moon god and the sun god. And the sun god was a radiator of light, and the moon god was a receiver of light. And the contention was the moon god was negative. It's like if you use the word Ra among certain Christian groups, they will think that that's a pagan god, because Amun-Ra was the pagan god of Egypt. And I kept saying, why did Akhenaten, why did he tell me Akhenaten's right-hand man was named Amenhotep? Why did they say that? Why did he have a right-hand man, since that's the name that he denied for himself? And so I pondered that for months. In the meantime, I'm continually talking to Daphne. And then I found this book called My Son Akhenaten, which was a channeled book supposedly from Akhenaten's mother. And I read it. And in the book, they were describing Nefertiti. And I said, geez, it sounds like Daphne. Her personality sounds like Daphne. And then I looked up the statue of Nefertiti. You know, there's that famous statue. And I said, geez, that looks like Daphne. You know, Daphne is very beautiful. And Nefertiti was beautiful. And I started to think. My thought at the time was, did Akhenaten's right-hand man have a affair with Nefertiti? Is that what happened? And it took me a while to put all the pieces together. And finally, the only answer that made sense was that I could have been Akhenaten and Daphne was Nefertiti. And I won't tell you, you listen to the Egyptian Connection. If you want to get it, egypt.messageaday.net. And I sell that one. It's $19. But after this call, I will put a discount code. So if anyone wants to get it for $10, they can. It's a four-hour workshop. And it's very intriguing. And as part of it, one time, two times, a voice came through Daphne when we were in Ventura, California. And the voice said, it was the soul fragment of Nefertiti. And that audio was on that workshop. And Nefertiti was talking about the connection with Akhenaten. And actually, in that channeling, now remember, don't believe anything. Just have to put pieces together. In that channeling, she was kind of apologizing to me because at a certain point, she got confused and started aligning with, you know, according to this book, aligning with the priesthood that Akhenaten had fired. And there was this conflict going on because on the surface, it looked like Akhenaten was destroying the heritage and the tradition of Egypt, which were all these gods that have been around for thousands of years. And out of the blue, he is saying, no more worship. And eventually, he took his people and the people that were his followers and built his own city 200 miles north of the capital of Egypt. And so now that I've said all that, Daphne?
Yes, I'm here.
Would you want to make any comments on the resonance of that to yourself, if you want to?
Well, you know, this is it's a tough subject because unlike Terry, I don't have the conscious lucid recall of past life connections. However, there are some things that are very striking. One is that since I was about 9 years old, I had an absolute obsession. It wasn't a fascination. It was an obsession with things Egyptian. So much so that I had taken every single book out of the library that I could and read it. I'm not an artist. I'm musical in this life, but I'm not visually artistic. I don't draw. And yet I painstakingly drew the death mask of Tutankhamun. And if you follow the Egyptian legacy and you follow the story, you will find that Tutankhamun is supposedly, at least according to some scholars, the son of Akhenaten, possibly Nefertiti's son. The verdict on that one, I think, is out. But there is some kind of a connection there. In terms of just the feeling that I have for this, for example, when Nefertiti's when the soul fragment came through, it was an agonizing time. It was extremely painful. And she was talking about her soul fragment, literally being impaled, as if it was stuck, you know, stuck either between dimensions or it somehow was in a place in time and space where it could not move. It was frozen. It was immolated. And I myself, at that time in my life, was pretty much re-experiencing that kind of impalement. And the repercussions and reverberations of that have lasted until the present day. Meeting Wynn, literally, it was like being struck by lightning. It wasn't the personhood so much as I believe it was the kind of karmic psychic patterning that was coming together, and we came together in the physical, met each other, talked, and it triggered and catalyzed such a tremendous amount of information and energy that it literally destroyed the life that I had at that point. I was married to a very successful Silicon Valley entrepreneur. I had a beautiful home on 6 acres in the mountains, just north of Santa Cruz, California. I was a performing musician. You know, I was recording albums and, you know, doing this kind of really creative, you know, relatively happy-go-lucky life. And we had land on the big island of Hawaii. We were planning to build a off-grid house. Didn't have any financial worries, and no real health concerns to speak of. And literally overnight, everything that I knew, my marriage, you know, my home, my instruments, my kitties, my kitty cats, my felines, everything that I had grounded to and anchored to, was ripped away from me. And it was extremely extremely painful, extremely catalyzing. And I mean, you know, even now it's a very, very hard thing to, I mean, I've accepted it, and yet trying to ground in the physical world now it's an ongoing, very, very challenging situation. So I take the reality of what's happened here quite seriously. I guess that's what I can say about it at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you hear the story of Akhenaten and Nefertiti and all of that stuff, it's like, and, you know, when we talk about these things, there's absolutely no judgment throughout the past. Everyone has done things that have been self-centered, selfish, negative, and even evil, all of us. And it's okay. it's good to be able to look at it and say, okay, I could have done that. So there's no judgment on it, but it's the looking at it. It's like there's aspects of the energies that came in between us that at first it was a mystery. Why is, say, for example, if Nefertiti, which I never asked this, but I would guess that Nefertiti was channeling with Akhenaten, and that he got this idea of the Ra group and the Law of One and adopted his mission because Nefertiti was the source that he trusted. And then Nefertiti got involved with thinking with her mind, looking at it and saying, he's not doing what's best for Egypt. He's destroying the heritage of Egypt. There's all this stuff that Egypt is built on, all of these gods. And so she started hanging out with the priests, the what's called the Amun priesthood. By the way, I'll tell you how big Amun priesthood is. You ever hear the word Amen? That comes directly from Egypt. Amen. From the Amun priesthood. Now, that doesn't mean when people say it, it's evil. I never asked that question, but I know it's with the intent. If you say something with reverence, it doesn't necessarily attach to where it started from. But nonetheless, it's fascinating to look at how what I have gotten is the priesthood of Egypt is exactly the same energies on the other side that are impacting what we call the Illuminati, the secret societies of today, that are trying to control our planet and enslave everybody. And it's a real amazing thing to study that and experience the track of how the Ra group has been involved in this realm for thousands of years in the real way, not just saying they're here to help us, but to see what they've done. And those of you who have been on our Monday night calls regularly know that about 7 or 8 months ago, we started asking questions about this on Monday night. And we did a channeling, and one of the members of the Ra group, who actually manifested a body in that period of David Wilcock's time, came forth and talked about it. And he was very reluctant. And I'm not going to ask them to come do that again, because from their perspective, it was a mistake and it turned out negative because of the Egyptian priesthood. So, let's see, it's 6:57 and Donna's not kicking us off the air. And I call this a wild card tonight. I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but I think it's good to talk about it and look at it. And it's good, you know, it's, I think that, say, for example, even in this lifetime, it's like when Daphne was channeling and she brought all this forth, part of her was concerned, what if this is negative? What if this is dark? And she was, you know, many times, why am I having such panic attacks and such pain if this work is positive? How come I'm experiencing that? And does it make any more sense when you look at it in this light, Daphne?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's there are huge patterns repeating. I did read some of these books that Wynn recommends or has mentioned tonight, and I do recommend them. One of them is My Son Akhenaten. Who's the author of that one, Wynn?
Wait a second. I have it sitting here, and I'll pick it up. And by the way, Akhenaten was a poet, and he wrote all these poems for Nefertiti that are still in history. Did you know that, Daphne?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anne Ray Colton, A-N-N-R-E-E, C-O-L-T-O-N.
Okay, so there's that one. There's also Born of the Sun, which is an interesting, that's an interesting one too. And then there's another one, is it Akhenaten the Extraterrestrial? Which
right.
is, that's, you know, those three. They're very interesting sources of information, and I've read them. Actually, I've read through a couple of them more than once. And the experience for me wasn't really reading a novel so much as it was, you know, reconciling pieces of information and things that seemed, you know, either overtly or subtly familiar. But in terms of my own life, yes, there was this overwhelming feeling of that I was somehow being controlled negatively, feeling trapped, feeling that I had been taken over, that I was had been hijacked or held hostage. To this day, I still fight with this. It is a very, very debilitating at times thing. There's literally feels like there is a there's a battle. There's an ongoing spiritual battle happening here between the dimensions. So I guess that's what I could say about it just off the cuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to recommend everybody, as soon as we finish this call, I'm going to send a mailing of The Egyptian Connection with a discount of $9, so it's only $10. You get also, did you ever read the book Initiation, Daphne?
Elizabeth H., yes.
Elizabeth H.
Yeah, 15 years ago or so.
Yeah, well, I believe that book is out on a PDF. Oh, okay, we're going to hang up now. Just watch your emails and I'll put that out. I'm sorry, Don. I thought you'd come on. But we're going to close this call. Thank you all for listening. Thanks, Don, for not cutting us off. And thank you, Daphne, for talking about all of this. And we'll see you all.
I wish I had done a little bit more of my homework. I'm
let's get off. I want to get off because Don has to put his next show on. Thank you, Don.